Hey, podcast listener, Scott Hansen here. Glad you are listening to this program through our podcast. Can I ask a little favor? If you like the program, can you go to iTunes, go to and rate us? Give us a good rating, because the higher the rating we have on iTunes, the better we will do with having people listen to it. So thanks for listening to it.
The following program is brought to you by Hansen McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hansen McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are here with us, both myself and my co-host. We are both financial advisors. We spend our days during the week meeting with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial futures. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And this is the weekend of December 12th and 13th that we are here with you. And this program is about financial matters. We take your calls, answer your questions on things that are financially related. And it's part of the reason I think we enjoy the program is the variety of calls that we have coming at us all the time. And
you never know quite what they're going to be.
No, because oftentimes someone calls up with a question, and that's really not their question. They think it's their question, but it's not really the issue. The
yes.
issue is something else.
They're swatting at problems that may or may not involve real issues.
Yeah, or they think that this is their issue, and it's a different issue that we.
Which is why I enjoy doing the show. 20 years now.
Yeah, it is 20 years. And it's funny, Pat. So Pat and I have been working together. So someone asked me, this person I was talking to today on the phone has a business partner, and they said, "How long have you and Pat been?" Have you guys really been and working together for 22 years? I said, actually, I think this next year it'll be 25 years. She says, your silver anniversary.
Oh, is that right?
No. I don't know if I like the sound of that.
That's, no.
So it's Pat and a happy anniversary, the two of us, silver anniversary. She says, you can celebrate all next year. It's her silver anniversary.
Is that what
we started working together in the fall of 91.
Your memory is so much better than mine.
Yeah, obviously.
It really is. I was thinking the other night. I was thinking some,
anyway, real quick.
Some days seem to take forever, but the years fly by.
If you want to be part, isn't that true? if you want to be a part of the program, got a question for us, anything financial related, our contact number to join us here is 1-888-2-HANSON. 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 And we'll take your question and get you on the air. We've got a great program. In addition to taking calls that you are used to, we've got some other interesting things we're going to talk about. One, how listening to a talk show host, other than us, could have cost you 40% of your portfolio. We're going to talk about what that is.
I'm interested.
Good. Then you need to stay on. That's the whole idea. You tease forward.
Okay, that was the radio. We took a half-day radio class at some point in our career.
We didn't even get that. I wish I would have had that. It would have been much helpful, more helpful. Anyway, I want to talk about that. And also, there was a hedge fund, it wasn't a hedge fund. The guy billed himself as a hedge fund manager and fleeced people out a bunch of money. So really, what we're going to talk about is how you can protect yourself against being swindled like a Bernie Madoff. Or how do you know if the advice you have currently is on the up and up? So there's some basic ways that you can know and protect yourself so that you couldn't be a victim of that sort of thing. So we're going to talk about those. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls and we'll talk about whatever else is on our mind when it comes to the world of finances, because that's kind of what we do. So,
yeah. No, 20 years.
Of 20 years of this program. That's right.
Yes. So if you're new to this program, as we are new in many markets, thank you for joining us. But we've been doing this a long time, and we hope you find it halfway interesting.
That's right. I know. Well, of course, they will find it interesting, Mr. McLean. So anyway, we do have a great show this lined up for you today. And what are you writing down? You're like busy. Sometimes Pat's in the middle of doing something else. Because it's not television and you it's radio, you so
you
there are times I'll look over towards Pat, and he's like working on something else. Or every once in a while, he's like daydreaming. He'll be like
that
staring.
Does happen.
And I'm like, dude, we're in the middle of
the worst daydreaming incident I've had.
I shouldn't call you dude either. We're a professional financial firm.
The worst incident I've had recently daydreaming is when I drove off in the gas station with the gas thing.
When did you do that?
Oh, a while ago. 6-9 months ago. I'm not, like I said earlier, not good.
Did it pull it out?
Oh, yeah. But I was most amazed. And I was.
Oh, did it yank the whole.
Oh, yeah. And tore it right off of the.
Did it cause any damage?
Not to my car.
To the gas station thing. The
yes,
pump, the
yes,
pump,
yes.
The hose.
Yes, it
That's
caused some
of.
Damage. It ripped it off, and I dragged it for about 20 feet before I realized.
And what did that cost you?
So it was about $600, but amazingly enough. So
$600. You know, I don't think you ever shared this story with me.
So the lady runs out, the lady that works at the place, and she's screaming, and I'm pulling in to park it because I'm not going to drive around with this gas thing sticking out, and that would be dishonest. So I said, okay, what happens now? She said, let me just put this. She takes it, puts it. And I said, well, send me a bill. How do I pay for it? She said, no, you can pay for it right now. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. So she goes in there.
They
and
know
she's,
exactly what it costs.
They've got a scanner code from the UPC. She just runs it through.
How often does it happen?
I asked her. She said it happens at least once every 2 weeks. And so, by the way, Scott, thank you for helping to pay for.
As all you had was a company credit card that day or something? Thank you, Mr. McLean. I had a, you know what, over Thanksgiving break.
But that was daydreaming.
My daughter, who is almost 20, decided it would be a good day to go up snowboarding. It was a couple days before Thanksgiving.
In Lake Tahoe area?
Yeah, so she borrowed our SUV. It was a stormy evening, and I'm thinking, that's probably not the best. We live in the foothills of the Sierras, so it's not that far of a drive to get up there. And so they were gonna drive it the night before. And so I said, look.
I remember telling you, we're talking about this, saying it's probably dangerous.
This does have a financial tie into this, so.
Okay.
So I said, look, it's really cold, and there's going to be black ice. And I started having a conversation. I said, remember that time when we were driving out of Squaw and this car spun out in front of us? She said, yeah, Dad, yeah. Like, she has her whole life to me, right? Yeah. It's like, she's got it all figured out. So
your 20-year-old daughter.
Yes.
Oh, it's hard to believe.
So I get a call the next day after I was expecting her home any minute. They were stuck on the side of the road in the snow waiting for AAA to come. And apparently they'd finished their day boarding at Squaw, and they ran into her and her niece. They ran into someone that they knew up there, and they said, hey, do you mind giving me a ride just up the hill here? Well, I know enough when it's nasty, I don't go on hills.
Try not to?
Yes. So I guess they made it up fine, is that they're coming down. The car slid and the ice into the embankment. Well, as they're waiting, the car was fine, perfectly fine. Had they waited till warmed up, they could have driven out no problems. Instead, the nice gentleman who lived there with the house nearby comes out with a couple buddies and says, oh, this happens all the time. We'll just go ahead and pull your car out.
With another truck or tractor?
Their hands. So apparently four grown men were yanking on the car and pulled the front bumper off. I mean, like, broke it into pieces. It's my wife's SUV, which is about 2 years old. It's not a scratch on it. It's beautiful. It's a nice SUV.
Didn't have a scratch on it.
Ripped it right off. And they didn't realize this at the time until the tow truck guy showed up and said, you realize your front bumper is in pieces here. Then the tow truck guy, it's so slippery and frozen, he slid into the car. He's parked up the hill, and he's trying to pull the car out with his winch or something, and slowly slid in on the side of the car. So, unfortunately, they were nice. They spent almost 2 hours to get my daughter out. Got her out, and they took full responsibility for the damages. The tow truck.
The tow truck. How about the four?
No, they went running. As a matter of fact, one of them complained to my daughter that she cut his hand, and apparently they said, no, we don't want your help. AAA's coming. We're fine, and these big, strong men thought they'd have to help these young women out.
So tell me the financial, since this is a financial show, what was the financial implications?
How much money it cost, man. The bumper's like $800 to get this thing fixed.
All right.
It's an expensive day. My daughter's in college. No job right now. I'm going to have to extract it. I'll pile it on like the student loans do.
Yes.
Like the $1.2 trillion that other young people have. Now she's loaned to dad. And we could also structure it like the student loan program where she only has to pay a certain percentage of her income over.
After 20 years.
Anyway, so that's...
Read a great article today about student loans. How that they're starting now to consider the ability to... At least the conversation is now taking place, which is the ability to pay back the loans. And the number of defaults of student loans take place primarily from the private schools.
Yes,
the ones accredited, but they're not degreed.
Yes, the ones you're thinking of.
They're accredited, but not degreed.
I had a family member who was trying to set up. He was thinking about setting up a massage. I think it was a massage school. I looked at him like he was crazy, and he said, "Oh no, because you can get student loans guaranteed. So the federal government will essentially pay for massage school. So, and then you just market to. Essentially, you prey upon the lower section of society. That's kind of what's been going on. You wonder how much of the $1.2 trillion in student loan has been this sort of thing.
Yeah, the default rates are very, very high. Hopefully, they'll fix it.
It's just a shame. Anyway, so when we come back after this break, we'll talk about some financial matters. This won't be just about Scott and Pat's car experiences, because I know we've all had our own experiences with issues with cars, particularly teenagers, that sort of thing. But we'll also talk about some financial matters, and we'll take some calls. And I will talk about how a 40% decline in a portfolio has been very possible just by listening to radio and following the advice of not just one talk show host, but many different talk show hosts. And when we come back after the break, you'll understand. We'll talk about that, and we'll take some calls. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Taking the financially complex and making it simple, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you were part of our program today. So what I was talking about, listening to talk show hosts losing 40%, because I heard an ad today, actually from a talk show host that I really appreciate his program, but it was an ad.
So these aren't financial talk show hosts.
That's correct. It was an ad, and he talked about how when the stock market crash, gold goes up. When there's a financial crisis, gold rises in value. So I actually have some thoughts. So gold's roughly $1,100 bucks an ounce right now.
Okay.
Right. And we've heard these, all the talk show hosts, it seems like.
Well, they were a lot for a while.
They're still on. And I'm thinking, I would almost be a little embarrassed if I was out there when gold was $1,900 an ounce, pitching why you need gold, and now it's fallen over 40% from its high.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is, and the reason I'm bringing this up is it's a good lesson that I don't care what it is, whether it's gold or it is real estate, or stocks, or an individual company like Chevron, or how about this individual company, Chipotle? You seen what's happened to their stock lately?
Oh, yeah.
Because E. coli?
That came out of the blue.
Who would have expected? I think their stock's down 25%.
And Yes.
Because people
tainted their brand.
It did, and it's going to take them a long time to recover. And just, it was one of those reminders of how things can change quickly. You can have a decline in an asset that looked like it was a good asset. Gold's always been one of those things that doesn't produce anything. But
So the ads are running on people's shows. The certain talk show hosts are talking about why you should buy gold, and the gold is down 40%.
Yes, and the thing is, this particular ad talked about the financial crisis we've had, went back to the 08, 09, and then also referenced the decline before that, and said that when gold will rise when other things fall. And I thought,
well, that's not true.
That's what I thought as well. That's exactly what my thought was. I said, that's not necessarily the case. As a matter of fact, you go back, look at the financial crisis. That's not what happened. Gold barely budged.
The story sounds good, though. The story sounds good something that you can emphatically say is a hedge. If you can say it emphatically, whether it's true or not, it sounds good. The story sounds good.
Anyway, gold is down 40%.
Yes.
From its high.
Remember all the
more
calls we were getting years ago on gold?
Maybe it's the time to buy now. I don't know. I just know when something's hot and everyone wants to buy more, but that's not the time to buy. That, yes, I can definitely tell you is a fact in that. All right, let's take some calls here. Again, to join the show, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're talking with Gary. Gary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Glad. I'm so glad that I was able to take my call. Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Gary.
The reason I called is I had a question about an insurance policy that I purchased 25 years ago, and it was a life insurance policy. I thought that I was being pretty smart by buying a full life insurance policy instead of a term insurance.
Okay.
Because I thought that it would be smarter to pay a larger premium and then it would be more stable. Are we still okay?
Yeah. I know exactly where you're going.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's fun. Actually, on my list of notes I was going to talk about during this program is this very thing, because you bought a universal life insurance policy.
And the fees inside of these universal life insurance policies are now going up significantly. So tell us what your question is regarding this life insurance policy, and then we'll ask you a series of questions.
Okay. The policy that I purchased, I received the it's now going to cost me $1,500 a month in premium.
A month. Okay, so what's the face value on this policy?
The face value is $750,000.
Holy smokes. And you bought this how many years ago?
25 years ago.
And how old are you?
I'm 67.
Were you a doctor or an attorney?
Yes, I was. I was a doctor.
You were a doctor.
He still is a doctor, Pat.
Was he a practicing? I don't know if he's a practicing physician. The reason I asked whether you were a doctor is this is where one of the areas that the life insurance industry targets is doctors and attorneys to sell big face value life insurance policies to.
Yes, they do.
So it's $1,500 a month, so $18,000 a year.
And how much was it originally when you first? Because the idea was
I was going to. They gave me a policy, and it was for $750,000, and I loaded it with $50,000. And what they would do is invest that into the stock market, and the stock market profits would help pay the premium.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could, add more investment to it whenever I felt I wanted to. They would bill me $270 a month, and I thought that was the cost of the insurance. And everything was fine. I thought I had, life insurance for $270 a month to help support my wife when I left. But I got a message from them a couple months ago, and they said, well, the investment's used up, and now, you had to send us a couple $1,000 to keep the policy in force. And so I did until December. And then I realized then that the policy premiums were not a flat premium, but would change just as
that's correct.
Other ones do. And I was ignorant of that. And so now they send me the whole perspective, and what it looks like is to keep the policy in force, they're recommending that I pay $1,500 a month until I'm 85, and they think that that should hold.
I don't think it will hold.
I think that they'll hit me up again in a couple of years.
So is there any cash value in the policy right now?
Only cash value in the policy is the amount of the investment that hasn't been used up.
And how much is that?
Oh, $1,000.
Okay. It's
collapsed.
Are you insurable today? Is your health normal? If you went to buy life insurance, could you get life insurance?
Well, I have type 2 diabetes. And it would look, if I got term insurance, it would be just as expensive for me to get term insurance if I could, get it.
So there's a couple things that are happening here. The main thing is you probably did not have enough money in the policy to begin with to cover the cost. Because with variable life insurance or any universal life insurance, the cost of insurance is based upon the death benefit, how much they're going to pay when you die, less whatever cash is in there. So if it was $750, which you bought, you put in $50,000, essentially you have life insurance to pay for of $700,000. They assess that on a monthly basis, charge it against the policy, but every year you get older, it gets more expensive. And when you first buy the policy, they give you a chart saying these are our expected costs. This will be our expected charges for the life insurance.
But inside the contract itself has a maximum table as well.
The agents will say, well, don't pay attention to that maximum.
In full disclosure, we're not huge fans of permanent life insurance. But there are rare circumstances where they
make. Sometimes really large estates and for estate planning. And actually,
Scott, when was the last time you recommended a universal life policy or variable universal life?
20 years.
Okay. So They make sense in some situations, and the tax laws have changed. Estate tax laws have changed. So, in saying this,
here's also what's happened. Two other things happen here. One is the insurance companies are having a tough time making money on their own investments, right? So, just for the insurance company's profit margin, because the low interest rate environment that we live in, they live in too. So they're having a tougher time with paying their own bills because their portfolios don't generate enough. But you also have what's known as adverse selection. So as these years go by, people that are in good health, they look at these policies and they say, who needs this garbage anymore? My rates keep going up. They drop out for a variety of different reasons. And you'll find the people that are left are often those that have trouble getting insurance. So the pool gets smaller and smaller, and those that are there that remain, it's an adverse selection. And from an actuarial standpoint, the odds are those people are going to die earlier than they'd originally planned. So the insurance company jacks up the cost of insurance.
So, Gary, in your situation, net worth, excluding your primary residence, approximate value?
Well, I have a disability insurance policy now that pays me $9,500 a month. I have a couple.
And how long will that pay? Will that stop at 65?
That will stop. I'm already 67. That will go for my lifetime, but will stop when I die.
Okay.
And then I have a couple rental properties that are just, positive cash flow, and that's about it. They've been paying their mortgage and sending me a couple $100 a month for, the last 15 years. And we own our house outright.
IRAs, 401ks, brokerage accounts?
They're so minimal.
Okay.
IRAs and our, things are very, very minimal.
And you are married because you said we.
Yes, sir.
I would let
and
this.
And are you on Social Security yet?
I do. We're receiving Social Security. Okay. It's about $1,300 a month.
So are you saving money on a monthly basis now?
Oh, I can save money on a monthly basis. I can, live a lot cheaper than.
Yeah, but you're concerned. So the odds are you really do have an insurance need.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, you have an insurance need.
Because odds are you're going to predecease your wife unless she has some health issues.
Okay.
Odds are you're going to predecease her. And your concern is this $9,500 a month is going to stop, right?
Yeah, when I die, then my wife's left with nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, she can cash in the rental home.
So
that might last for a couple of years, and that's it,
What's the value of the rental homes?
Oh, probably a couple hundred thousand.
So here's what I would recommend. I would recommend that you apply for some other term insurance. Now, you can have term insurance. I'd either look for a declining term insurance that, if you live 30 years, you don't need it, right?
Right.
You need a lot if you die tomorrow, and you need less and less as time goes by. So I'd either look for some sort of declining term insurance, or maybe even structure this with, say, four different policies, one that is in 5 years. The important thing is, first of all, is to see what kind of what it would cost you for the insurance.
And whether you're insurable. So the first thing I would do is I'd probably apply for a 10-year or 15-year level term and see if you can actually get it. And you could go online to one of these places that are online term insurance companies. You want to go through that process first. And I'd look at a 15-year level term.
Or even a 10. You could structure this with a few different policies.
Yeah, half 10, half 15. Do you think you need $750,000, though?
Well, $9,500 bucks a month right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
So your total family income is probably about $13,000, $12,000, $13,000 a year?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
The insurance disability is non-taxable.
But the
that's a good.
Yeah, right. It's taxed.
It's like making more without the.
The other thing you could do is you could restructure this variable life policy as you get older, decrease the amount of life insurance. You can do that each year, as you get older. So if you find you're not insurable. The thing to do, I would keep this thing in force.
I think so, too.
I would be paying the premium. I would might structure it a little different. I would have it figured out if you drop the face amount a little bit each year, you can get away with paying less than what you're paying into today. And I probably wouldn't want to overfund this much. I just want to cover the cost of insurance. I think I just cover the cost of insurance.
Yeah, but make sure you can't buy it. If you can't buy it someplace cheaper, then you go to that alternative. So appreciate the call, Gary.
Yeah, Gary. And, the disability worked out well for you. That insurance worked out. This one didn't work out quite as well. So, sorry about that. We got to take a break. They're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Back to one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're here with us on this weekend. December 12th, 13th weekend.
You last week ran the California International Marathon. How many marathons have you run, Scott?
Maybe a dozen, 13, 14.
I don't know, 15. If you're a new listener to the show, Scott Hanson, how tall are you? 5?
On a good day?
6?
I'm 5'6".
Scott's 5'6". Wiry little guy, does this extreme sport.
What does wiry mean?
You're wiry. If I saw you in the street and never knew you, I'd go, oh, that's a wiry little guy.
What does that wiry mean? You're
the
redhead.
You know, wire is strong.
Okay.
It's a compliment.
If you saw me, you're like... Wiry is so strong?
Yeah, if you saw me, you'd say, oh, that's a middle-aged Irish guy.
A little guy, which was not helpful as a child in sports. I wasn't the last to get picked on a team. I was second to last. It's usually the fat kid was last, and I was second to last.
Well, you certainly have overcompensated in many areas of your life based upon your childhood, Scott Hanson, but... So Scott does extreme.
A short story, by the way. Sorry.
Scott does extreme sports. He was airlifted out of Yellowstone for breaking his leg in half, and does this heliskiing and triathlons. And what, you rode your bike for 24 hours without stopping. And so anyway, that's Scott Hanson. So
there's other parts of Scott Hanson that don't sound so odd, by the way.
Okay. Well, no, it's not odd. It's just it's your. Okay. It's what you like doing. I might be insulting you, but I'm not. That is not my purpose. That is not my purpose. So you run the marathon. How was it?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Pat. No, actually, I had a great experience this last year, the California International Marathon in Sacramento. There were 51 visually impaired runners this year, and there's a local guy in the region who basically organized this. This guy, Richard, organizes these things. So I had volunteered to be a guide to one of the blind runners. My first experience doing this.
And do you train with him too?
No, it was a woman who lived back from South Carolina. She had actually run a 2:49 marathon back in the day, which if you're not a runner, that's fast, particularly for a woman. I mean, that is...
And she ran it when she was blind? The 2:49?
Yes, correct.
Could you keep up with her?
No, if she was running that today, I wouldn't be able to keep up with her.
Okay.
I said, how did you drink water? She says, what's the problem? Because if you're running that fast, you don't stop to get water. You run through and grab the glass and keep running. You don't slow at all.
Okay.
She said she only had one glass the whole, that was the biggest problem she had because she couldn't see the aid stations.
Okay.
She had,
so you ran, so you run in front of her? Or?
On the side, and then every once in a while she'd get behind me, grab on, get behind like through some, but just the first half I ran with her. And it was a really, it was a great experience because I was really inspired by this group of people. One individual was talking about how he was going blind, losing his eyesight. And it's actually quite common. He was diagnosed at age 14, and he talked about he had a great career, and then he found himself unemployed, going through depression. He said he spent 3 weeks in bed being depressed, and he says, like, finally, I got to live. And saw some counseling and started doing all his running. And he talked about how he's losing his sight but not his vision. And just, they were a very inspiring group of people because you think about the adversity they have to overcome and then going out and running a marathon. And for many of these people, running gives them, it's a feeling of freedom that they don't have in many other areas of their life because they feel there's the confines of their eyesight. So it was a wonderful experience I had to be able to guide this woman. At the first 13 and then someone else took over for the second half, I think they learned that sometimes you just have a bad day. And if your guide has a bad day, you're kind of stuck with your guide.
Oh,
anyway, it was a good experience.
So the gentleman that started the program, he spoke at our church recently about it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And they showed a clip from Good Morning America, the Today Show or something about it. He started very inspirational.
Yeah. He's the gentleman who's slowly losing his sight.
Yeah, he talked about that.
He did share with me as he went to the DMV to tell him he probably shouldn't be driving anymore. they did some tests, and they told him that he can keep driving, and they were going to offer him a handicap placard.
Wow.
He gave up his license.
Well, I'm glad you did that, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did finish the marathon by myself after that, but it was...
Well, naturally, why would you waste half a marathon?
Of course not. You want to keep going. And
it was on Sunday morning.
Anyway, that was a long story. I don't know why we went into that.
When I did join the marathon, what you were running was sleeping.
Sleeping? Like, I had to be downtown Sacramento at 5 a.m. that morning, like, before 5 a.m.
Like most normal people.
All right.
Stayed at home. Watch television.
Watch television.
Read the newspaper.
It is Sunday morning TV. Just sit and watch TV. You sit in your pajamas all day.
All right, let's take some calls. All if right. you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON.
We're talking with Mike. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. Thank you.
Hey, my son just got his first real job out of college.
Yay! And
yeah, I know, really. And he's, you know, signing up for all his benefits, and they're matching like 6% of a 401k, but he's also got the option of a Roth 401k, and I don't know much about the Roth. He already has a Roth IRA, but I don't know, you know, if there's a benefit to the Roth 401k versus a traditional or what, you know, what the limitations are. That
yeah,
kind of
and
thing.
I'll answer so. That. And I also wrote I read an article for a column for Kiplinger's twice a month, and I wrote on this very topic a similar situation. So when we're done with the call, you can go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you can read, just put in there Roth 401k, and you'll see it. So here's the main difference.
And you write that column twice a month for yeah. Kiplinger's?
Yeah. So a regular 401k, when you put the money in, and by the way, I think it's a great vehicle for savings because it's forced savings. The money comes out before you have a chance to spend it. I think that's the greatest feature of the 401k, greater than the tax benefits, the fact that it's sucked out of your paycheck. Most of us have a hard time saving. So think about with your son getting his first job, it's a great opportunity for him to start saving for the long term, right? And just having some money.
And he's not used to making any money anyway, so he's not going to miss it.
Right. No, there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
So I would have him sign up for 10% of his pay.
Why just 10, Scott?
15% of his pay.
Why,
I don't know.
Why wouldn't you start him? I get my first job out of college, worked for a big company. I started at 15% the day I did it because my whole theory was I'm not used to making that much money anyway. I'm not going to miss it. So it's okay. A great discipline to learn early on. How much will he be making at his new job?
About $55,000 a year.
Good for him.
And is he living in an expensive yeah. area? Not in downtown
yet,
San Francisco or anything?
Right now he's still living at home. He's waiting to.
All know, right, so not expensive at all.
Better. Right. No, exactly.
So, not expensive for him.
Right, no. Right. So whatever, 10 or 15%. If he saved 10% of his pay between now and the time he was 60 years old, he would not have to worry about retirement starting
right.
this young.
Gotcha.
Okay. So a regular 401k, you receive a tax deduction on the monies that you put in. They grow tax deferred, and then at retirement, when you pull the money out, it's all taxable to you. Okay. I like the idea of a Roth when you're young because with a Roth, you don't get the tax deduction, but money still grows tax deferred, and it comes out tax-free.
So essentially right. what happens is you get more net spendable income in retirement. But here's the danger in the Roth. If at some point in time they change the taxation laws to say everything becomes a consumption tax or a VAT tax, value-added tax, or some right. sort of other tax, some of the Roth benefits may be negated. Now, at the same time, they could change... And there's been proposals to do one-time taxes on large 401k balances and IRA balances as well.
And that wasn't, there used to be an excise tax, what, 18, 19 years
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, what was it called? 40.
It was the excise tax.
Yeah, on
750 and above, I think it was.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
So what we like to do is to create a strategy in your taxation of a 401k, just like you would in a diversified portfolio of investments.
Which means you end up at retirement with a little bit of both. But the match is okay. going to go in on a pre-tax basis automatically. So
okay.
the match is on a pre-tax basis. With the rest, $55,000 is actually a pretty decent wage right out of college.
Yeah, so you would expect his income to go up.
Yeah. So right. if it were me or my son, I'd say just do the Roth.
I would do the Roth.
Because the bottom line is that he's going to get to, if at retirement time you've got $1 million sitting in a Roth or $1 million sitting in a traditional, which is going to be more valuable?
The $1 million in the Roth.
The Roth, obviously, right? And the tax savings is not like somebody, he's going to take the tax savings and say, oh, wait a minute, these were tax savings on my retirement dollars. Therefore, I should take the tax savings and set it aside for my future retirement. It'll be spent on clothes.
Whatever,
and whatever. 23-year-old,
25-year-old high school, college graduates spend it on.
Right, exactly. So now, the matching, though, that the company does, that has to go into the pre-tax 401k.
It's going to, correct.
Traditional 401k.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
so he's
I would
already,
be amazed
so
if the company
strategy,
gave it up.
The strategy's already actually started in terms of the tax diversification.
And so he could put the other 6% or even more into the Roth 401k.
Oh, no. 10% or more.
10. He could do 6. Okay. You want to do minimum of 10.
Okay.
I would advocate for 15.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All righty.
Yeah. That's like you say, he doesn't have a lot of expenses right now.
No.
Now the time to do it.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, Mike, what's interesting, what we've seen over the years, I remember visiting years ago, this was a number of years ago, but this gentleman, I don't think he made more than $40,000 a year. Spouse never worked. Managed to raise a family, home was paid for, and had money saved at retirement. That was probably the best, one of the, I remember the, I don't remember his name, but I remember this face. And I remember thinking, that is one of the best things I've seen, savers. But I've also seen, the worst example I've seen is a husband and wife, both physicians, income of $750,000 a year, didn't have a dime saved.
Yeah,
they were in their 50s, not one dime saved. So my point there, whether you're making $750,000 a year or $40,000 a year, it's really about this disciplined habit of setting aside money. And the 401k is an automatic when you're young and just getting started. It is really the time to do it because it's easy for them now. There's going to be it'll be much more challenging when the first kids come in and all those. You remember what it was like, right?
Yep.
It is for most young couple. It's just when that's odds are he's going to end up, you know, statistically speaking, he's going to get married and have kids and all this. That's when it's going to be a lot more challenging financially. So if he can learn to live off less than his pay today, he's going to be set aside well for the future.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Glad you called. We're taking a short break here. And when we come back, we'll continue with your calls. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Two guys, one head of hair.
Hanson McLean's Money Matters back here with you. Thanks for sticking with us as we're talking about financial matters. And before we continue on with the calls, I read this article this last couple weeks about a hedge fund or so-called, I don't know if you saw the story, Pat.
I did see it.
This hedge
it was,
fund.
The young guy?
Yeah.
The young guy who said that he had this hedge fund and these incredible rates of return. And phenomenal rates of return, and he got all kinds of investors' money. And actually, there were some services out there that even ranked him based upon the reporting that he gave them about his rates of return. And it turned out—
Yes, because they were self-reported.
Yeah, it turned out he never invested anything.
Yeah, 33-year-old Mark Malik, he said he had a legitimate hedge fund, and he's probably going to face about 20 years in prison is what it's like.
I hope.
Here. Yeah. The Seven Stages Capital LP was one of them, and Wolf Hedge LLC. Those were a couple of his hedge funds. They never existed.
There was no money invested, just collected.
Yeah, he reported that he had $5 billion under management. So he reported he had $5 billion. He reported to some third-party firms that rate hedge fund managers, and they gave him good ratings because they were self-reported figures. They didn't actually. No one actually.
No one ever actually said where do you. No one said where do you custody the assets. Show us some statements from the custody. Show us a couple trades. Nothing.
Which I figured that was interesting to me that and these were some reputable
that you could self-report all that and that was never checked on.
Right. So it was all self-reported. So I read this, and he wasn't able to get off with that much money. It's about $800,000. It wasn't huge, but I read that, and I thought every time there's a story like that, we're in financial services, right? We help people with their life savings. it muddies the water for reputable firms that are out there.
Yes.
Folks that are honest firms doing the right thing, that truly care about people and doing the right thing for their clients. Every time,
and
I read
it shows the lack of possible lack of regulatory oversight.
So here's the question. How can you make sure that your financial advisor isn't doing what this guy just did? How can you be so certain that your financial advisor is not trying to cheat you and swindling you, and how can you be certain that the funds exist?
Well, you can do a little background check on them. You can go to BrokerCheck.
BrokerCheck. Just Google BrokerCheck. That's going to tell you if they're registered with the Securities Exchange Commission.
You can Google their name, period. Google someone's name, period. Google their, and ask where they custody. And in most reputable firms custody third party, which means they use Pershing or Bank of New York or a Charles Schwab or a Fidelity, which is they custody assets outside of their own firm, and they transact trades on the client's behalf at those custodial firms. So almost every situation where you see a Ponzi scheme, it's the lack of custody. If anyone had spent any time looking at who was custodying and who was auditing the firms.
So if you have an account with Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley, you don't need to worry about those firms, right? Big reputable firms, been around forever.
But if you have one with
Smith Financial,
Bill and Jim Smith Financial,
or even a good sized firm like a Hanson McLean,
you want to know where it's custodied.
So, like firms like ours, our clients' assets are held at an independent institution, TD Ameritrade, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, an independent
Pershing.
And as an advisor, we act as an advisor to the account, but the money's actually held elsewhere. As an advisor, we don't have access to those funds.
We transact on the client's behalf.
We can't withdraw money from the account. We can't commingle it with other accounts, all those sorts of things.
That is the first thing that you should check at. And check on BrokerCheck.com.
Matter of fact, we have on our website, MoneyMatters.com, we have a webinar, what is that webinar called?
Lies, Levies, and Lawsuits.
Lies, Levies, and Lawsuits. And it's about a 5-minute webinar, and that webinar will go through and show you the ways that you can do a background check on your advisor. Lies, Levies, and Lawsuit, what your advisor doesn't want you to know.
And that's a good start.
It's a good start.
But if you just did that, you're going to pick up most of the Ponzi schemes if you just follow the directions on our website, moneymatters.com, Lies, Levies, and Lawsuits.
Yeah, because I am continually amazed, Pat, at the number of... I know of some advisors that have bad backgrounds.
Yes.
And I see them advertise in places.
Yes.
I see them somehow continue.
And you wonder, does anyone who
one guy got kicked out of the permanently barred from the industry and still has some financial firm. I don't know how he managed to pull. It's now in his son's name. His son apparently runs it, but I think he's still involved in some aspect. Look, if the Securities Exchange Commission strips an advisor of their firm, kicks them out of the industry,
they're not. They've done some bad stuff.
They might not be the bad, but of all, I mean, you have a choice, right?
What? Well, that's true. They're not the last advisor.
I mean, if it's the last one, the very last advisor, maybe you might consider giving him or her this benefit of the doubt. Right? But if your advisor's filed bankruptcy recently, it might not be...
might not be the right person for the job. All right. We're going to go to the phones. If you'd like to join the show, 8882-HANSON. That's H-A-N-S-O-N. We're going to talk to Shannon. Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling in regards to my mother-in-law. She's 76. She went down to have her CD changed over because it matured. And the guy said he put her into a 7-year CD. And so I told her, well, let me look at the paperwork. And when I got it, it is a fixed deferred individual annuity.
Okay. And how much money did she put into this?
She put $58,000 into it.
How long ago?
This year.
Okay.
June of this year.
All right. And she's 76 years of age.
Yes. And she's 20 when she's 95 years old.
Oh, God. But how long is the surrender charge on it?
Well, it says first guarantee period is 5 years.
Got it.
The first.
Yeah, that's where the interest rate is guaranteed. But there's a surrender charge schedule, should be one in there, where if she pulls the money out in the first year, they're going to charge you X amount second year.
She thought it was a 7-year.
She thought it was a CD?
CD.
So this is pretty easy to
What's her situation like?
This is everything she's got.
Okay. So here's what you need to do. You need, Shannon, to go.
What state do you live in?
California.
I'd contact the California Department of Insurance.
I'd go to the bank first.
Okay. We've had these contacted.
We've had these reversed for people that have come in.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So you need to go down. You need to call the bank branch manager.
Okay.
And you need to explain it to the branch manager. And then you want to talk to the head of compliance for the broker dealer that particular salesperson works under.
Was this a large bank or a regional bank?
Security Pacific. I mean, I was frightened because the company name that they put it under was Oxford.
Okay, that's an insurance company. So here's what you want to do. You kind of call the branch manager.
What happens, a lot of these banks will partner up with some sort of brokerage firm that sells financial products,
including fixed annuities. And what happens is your mother-in-law goes in there and says, "I need something that pays a higher interest rate than this." And they say, "Oh, go talk to that guy or the girl in the corner."
And the person in the corner has a financial incentive to sell your mother-in-law an annuity as opposed to having her stick in the CD. They have a financial incentive, a conflict of interest.
You go in there and you say to them, "Look, this is inappropriate." You talk to the branch manager and you get the name of the head of compliance for the broker dealer. And you call them up and say, "Look, my 76-year-old mother-in-law, who's widowed, has $56,000 to her name. She came in when her CD renewed and she ended up with an annuity with a big surrender charge on it that doesn't allow a liquidity. This was absolutely inappropriate." You could get more inappropriate, but this is pretty far down on the spectrum of inappropriate investments.
That's what I thought.
So they will reverse it. So if you look at it,
they're not going to say that immediately.
They're not going to say it immediately. You're going to say, I'll talk to the Department of Insurance. They will reverse this thing. And we've seen it done.
Yep.
I have seen it done.
Particularly a big brand, a bank.
I've helped clients do this. So you just go in there and you talk to the branch manager and the head of compliance for the broker dealer. Don't talk to the person that sold the product.
Okay.
No, they'll backpedal and try to make
tell
excuses.
You. And then they'll reverse it. They'll go to the insurance company. The insurance company will give up the cash. There'll be no surrender charge on it.
Nope.
They will reverse
it. Back.
And you'll get it all back and you will move it to a different.
But they're not going to, they won't start with that.
No, they're not. They're going to this is appropriate. This is, and you just say, "Hey, we could get the Department of Insurance in here and we could have a little discussion as to whether the 100% of this person's net worth, liquid net worth, was appropriate for an illiquid product."
A widow, 76-year-old widow.
Yeah. So what would you recommend that she puts this in?
Bank CD.
Yeah.
Leave it in the bank. Leave it in the bank.
She might need it.
Yeah. Put it in, keep some in savings and maybe half of it in a CD or all of it in savings.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate the call. Sorry that happened to her.
Yeah.
We've been listening to that for years, and I really appreciate you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks, Shannon. Sorry that happened to you. And I tell you, one of the things you hear us talk in this program about the importance of using the fee-based financial advisors, someone who receives the same fee regardless. Their comp is not tied to what they sell you.
Correct.
It's just a conflict of interest. I see. How many times have you seen this at the bank?
It is
just frustrating. By the way, we also at MoneyMatters.com have a webinar on how annuities work, the ABC.
And our 7 personal decision points for retirement transition.
We've got all kinds of good things. We're out of time. We're here every weekend at this very time. Also, you can get a podcast of this program. Visit MoneyMatters.com to sign up for a podcast. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson with Money.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Hey, podcast listener, Scott Hanson here. Glad you are listening to this program through our podcast. Can I ask a little favor? If you like the program, can you go to iTunes and rate us? Give us a good rating, because the higher the rating we have on iTunes, the better we will do with having people listen to it. So thanks for listening to it.